What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you guys again for tuning in. As always, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, space with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat, where we finally broke 1,000 Twitter followers. It's so amazing. I'm so happy that you guys follow us. I got a great tweet the other day on at That's Kinda Neat where a girl said, "Oh my God, I've been downloading so many Kinda Neat episodes and I love it." And I said, "Hey, download the app. It makes your life so much easier." And she said, "I'm new to podcasts." And that made me feel great because it's like, yo, I hope that we are a gateway drug into you finding out a bunch of other great podcasts, because there's so many, there's obviously so many people doing this, just amazing things with this art form. So, or I don't know, can you call it an art form? Maybe a platform? It's a platform, not an art form. Maybe it's an art form. Who knows? Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/kindaneat. And like I just said, download that podcast app, search for Kinda Neat, and subscribe. That is the thing that will help us most, is if you subscribe to us on iTunes, leave a 5-star rating and a comment about who you want to see on the show. Well, fuck, man. Another trip around the sun. Tomorrow's my birthday. Well, we're recording this on a Monday. This will come out on a Wednesday. Tuesday, tomorrow is my birthday. Getting old, dude. Getting old. I only want one thing from you guys for my birthday, and that is to buy a ticket to the Troubadour this week on Friday and come see me and Mark perform. We're headlining the Troubadour, which is a dream show for us. My favorite place to perform. I absolutely love it. I love the vibe there. You know, like the fucking Doors used to play there. Like Guns N' Roses play there. Like it's amazing. The sound system is great. So book some of my friends to come play with us, Speak and Cool Roy, and I hope that you guys will come out, because they're going to be playing some new music and we're going to be working through our stuff, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. And I don't generally celebrate birthdays too much. Like, it's just not like a crazy thing for me. So to have a party and to be able to perform and do what I love to do the most is going to be very exciting, and I'm super happy about it. So please go to thetroubadour.com, buy a ticket, and come hang out on Friday and fucking make me a happy man. Let's see. Today, we talked to my friend Conrad Lobel. He is a dude that I met about probably two and a half years ago, who's just out here killing it, booking shows in Los Angeles. He works with iHeart Comics, so he was booking all of the Check Your Ponytail stuff. He books at Globos. He books at Echoplex. He books all over the place. DJs at ham parties. Like, he's just a dude that knows about music before you do, and he knows about bands before I do, and he knows about booking these bands and just having them come play, you know, before the rest of the world knows. And that's a talent, and that's something that I respect, and that's something that I look up to. And so I think that the lifestyle of a promoter and a booker is very interesting, in that you still get to be heavily involved with music, even though becoming a musician might not be the ultimate way that you're involved in music. And I know a lot of you guys that listen are involved in music in some way or another. You're either aspiring musicians or you just are very passionate about finding new music. And these are my favorite kind of episodes, where you can kind of discover that there are ways to be involved in music that aren't necessarily being an artist or a manager or whatever. Like, there are other hustles in the music industry. And so we get to talking to Conrad about how he got into it, some of the shows that he's booked, parties that he's done, and his eventual move from Portland down to LA to to doing what he's doing now. It was a good convo with a friend of mine, and I think you guys will enjoy it. Very relaxed and easygoing conversation. So yeah, without further ado, we're going to get right into it. I hope to see you guys on Friday, and I hope that you enjoy this conversation. We'll see you next week. Thanks. So what's up, dude? You're getting healthy right now?
Trying to.
Why? What happened?
Got diagnosed with high blood pressure.
High blood pressure. We are getting older, Conrad. We are getting older. I feel like my mom tells me to get my blood pressure checked all the time, too.
My mom screamed at me for like 3 years.
About blood pressure?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I just kept getting fatter.
Oh. Were you a skinny lad?
When I was a little kid, yeah.
You look like you just got big bones. Like, what are you, Filipino or Samoan? What are you?
Filipino Hawaiian.
Mom's Filipino?
My mom's Filipino Hawaiian.
Okay.
What's your dad? Dad's white.
Dad's white?
Yeah, that's why I'm so light skinned.
Are you light skinned? I feel like you are standard Filipino tone.
No.
Okay. Is that a thing in Filipino culture? Like, do people care if you're light skinned or dark skinned?
Not in Filipino. Okay. In Hawaii, yeah.
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 Word. So, what? Why have you been packing on weight, dude? What happened?
I became a promoter.
Yeah.
And you drink and eat like shit and stress the fuck out every day.
All the time.
Yep.
These are some of my favorite podcasts to do because I love to do episodes. I always go meta on these ones, too. I love to do episodes where we have people that are heavily involved in music that aren't necessarily like music isn't like your number one hustle. It's like promoting music. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so I always like to let kids know there are ways to do this without trying to become a rapper or without trying to become a fucking DJ or a guitar player or whatever. You can be in music and make a living. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely.
Yeah. What does your job entail?
I am the head of events at iHeart Comics, which means I book everything. I oversee all the marketing. I oversee all the production of the shows. Mm-hmm. Any kind of events that we get thrown out to market, anything we have to do to push, like that's what I oversee everything.
Mm-hmm. Do you kind of like curate the lineups or is that a team thing?
I usually curate them myself. Depending on how involved Frankie is, who's the owner.
Yeah.
I curate them myself unless he's like involved with the show itself. Then he gives his two cents in.
Right. Right.
But for the most part, I curate most of the shows as well.
Right. And you moved down to LA, what, like 2-3 years ago?
Just a little over 2 years ago. And March, like 2 years, like as of this March, it was 2 years.
March of 2012 then?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you immediately start helping out booking like the Check Yo's and stuff like that?
Yeah. I literally got in on a Monday at around 3 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
6 p.m. I had my first meeting, went to the office at 10 a.m. the next day,
mm-hmm.
and advanced 5 or 6 shows.
Mm-hmm.
And then flew out Monday, the next Monday to South By.
Oh,
just
wow.
Got thrown into shit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What was your first Check Yo that you were involved in? Was it that the Andrew WK show? Were you DJing there?
I DJed that night. Yeah.
Was that your first one that you were like kind of involved with?
Yeah. I was just happened to be in California when that show, like, or I was planning on being in California when that first started. Or when that got announced, and then I'm really close with the Trash Talk dudes, and I was just like, I'm in California, I can get down there if there's room on the bill.
Yeah.
Frankie's like, come down, I got you.
I think that the reason that I remember that is that I think that I have pictures of you playing that show because I was there making content or whatever, and that was my first Check Yo show that I ever went to, I think, and I was like, had not heard of Trash Talk. And, like, didn't realize what a fucking cult following Andrew WK had. And so, like, that show was just so eye-opening for me. It was, like, fucking crazy. And I was like, oh, who's that tattooed gentleman DJing? And then, lo and behold, now we're buddies.
Yep.
Yeah, crazy.
Small world.
Small world indeed. How did you know the Trash Talk dudes? You're like a hardcore kid, huh?
Yeah. I grew up in the hardcore scene. I've known Leroy from Trash Talk since he was, like, 14 years old.
Yeah.
He used to work at a venue in Sacramento that... I was on tour with a band, roadieing, and he opened the venue for me one day. And
yeah.
He moved to Seattle with the Trash Talk dudes for a while, and became like really close with them, booked a lot of shows, helped them along in Portland.
Yeah.
And, just always kept in touch.
Yeah. How many shows a week are you working on, do you think?
I mean, it varies.
Yeah.
It just depends on, I've done as many as 4 to 5 shows.
In a week. Yeah.
For comics. And I've, you know, this week I don't have any.
Yeah.
So it just depends on, like, when it comes
through.
Is this
a slower season for shows because it's summer and shit?
It's a harder season for shows because everyone's distracted by, festivals, vacations, schools out.
Right.
So it's a lot slower versus...
Is the fall the super busy time?
Fall super busy.
Yeah.
October especially.
Everybody's touring at that point?
Yeah.
Word. Where were you born?
I was born and raised on Maui.
Oh, okay.
In a town called Lahaina.
Oh, yeah.
I was just out in Maui last year. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, pretty much 90% of my family still lives there.
No shit. How often do you get to
Hawaii.
Go back?
Try to go every couple of years. Yeah. I think I'm going back in September for a week and a half.
What was childhood like in Hawaii?
It was very much different than anything on the mainland.
Yeah.
It's very family oriented.
Uh-huh.
Because you're on an island, you know everybody.
Yeah.
And most of the people are your family or close to your family. So if like you walk down the street, you get the horn beeps and it's like an auntie or an uncle or like, and, my parents were pretty loose with me. Like they trusted me that I was just going to like not fuck up.
Right.
So like I was out skating till like midnight sometimes.
Yeah.
I had a weird like upbringing, I guess, compared to some people. I had like a lot of like older people around me, like older teenagers that kind of looked after me a lot.
How many brothers and sisters did you have?
I have two younger brothers.
Okay. So you're the oldest of three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're about a year apart and we're the exact opposites of each other.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, how so?
My middle brother was definitely like middle child gangsters syndrome.
Yeah.
Like middle child syndrome. He just like fucked up a lot and like got involved in gangs a little bit. Like he's just a rough kid. He's just like very emotional.
Uh-huh.
And then my baby brother is captain of the football team.
Oh.
And like captain of the track team.
Super athletic dude.
Yeah, super athletic, super popular dude.
Yeah.
Like I was like in high school I was like the punk kid.
Yeah.
I was good at sports, hated coaches, so I didn't do sports.
Yeah.
Like just kind
of
like
since you have Hawaiian blood in you, did you go to one of those like private Hawaiian schools?
No, I went to school in Portland. Oh. Like I moved to Portland when I was 10.
Oh, okay.
And, but yeah, so I went to school in Portland. I was supposed to be a boarder in Hawaii.
Yeah.
But my parents decided to keep me in the mainland.
Okay.
So.
Is that where your dad was from? Is Portland?
Yeah. My dad's originally from Portland.
What did he do? How did him and your mom meet?
He was in Vietnam and then.
Oh shit.
Before that, he grew up as a carpenter.
Yeah.
A carpenter family. Mm. He went to. When he got out of the service, he went to Hawaii and was working as a carpenter with my uncles.
Oh, okay, word.
So I met my mom.
Yeah, and then the rest is history.
Pretty much, yeah.
Everybody took off to Portland, the whole family?
Yeah, well, just like me, like my mother and father and immediate family.
Yeah, how was that?
It was weird. It was pretty rough for a while because...
Portland's super white.
Portland's very white and very... it's a complete culture clash from Hawaii.
Yeah.
Hawaii is very family-based, very respectful. If you don't respect your family and your elders and anyone around you, you get hit.
Yeah, you get that ass beat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so. And in the mainland, it's definitely not like that. People do not respect each other.
Huh.
Not nearly like Hawaii. Like, in Hawaii, if you... treat people with respect, you'll earn the respect of everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
On the mainland, it's like completely opposite.
Mm.
People like want to take something from you or it's just, it's pretty sus.
What beach did you grow up on in Hawaii when you were a kid?
I mean, I grew up literally like just down the way from this place. We call it Sandbox.
Yeah.
It's just like, but I actually have a family house in Kahana.
Okay.
So that I spent a lot of time there.
I think we were on a beach called Hokipa or something.
Yeah. I used to surf Hokipa.
Dude, that place was so tight.
Yeah.
The first day we were there, it seemed so sketch just because like there's no real sand. It's all just kind of rocks.
Yeah.
So like compared to a California beach, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And then once you get out in the water, you can stay out there for like 4 hours without fucking wanting to come in.
For sure.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. That was an aside. So... You start going to school in Portland.
Yeah.
Are you the only brown kid?
When I first moved there, I was definitely the first like Hawaiian kid that they ever had seen.
Yeah.
And they were like literally dipshit white kids asking me if I lived in grass huts.
Oh shit.
And if I made my surfboards out of wood.
Oh my god.
Yo, so ignorant. And I like Yeah, it was super culture clash. Like, yeah. I walked in, it was the time of Brian Bosworth.
Yeah.
So all these white kids had fucked up haircuts.
Oh, yeah, like super like blonde, the, weird mohawks.
Yeah, yeah, and like with the steps and shit.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just like I didn't know what a rocker was. I was like, people were referencing rockers, and I was like, do they throw rocks at people? Like, yeah, what the fuck is a rocker?
Yeah.
And like, I mean, I listened to metal as a kid.
Yeah.
Like, growing up, like, hanging out with older kids, like, I had, like, my music tastes were so vast. Like,
yeah, so when you're, like, 8, 9, 10, you're hanging out with these teenage kids in Hawaii, and they're putting you onto, like, heavy metal shit. I mean,
even as, like, 4 and 5.
Oh, really?
I had, like, an older cousin that, yeah, like, I had two older cousins that I spent a lot of time with.
Yeah.
And one, like, my cousin Lola, she was super into pop music.
Yeah.
So I got Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, mm-hmm, Boy George, and then my older cousin Junior, he was into metal and rap.
Mm-hmm.
So I got like everything from LL Cool J and Run DMC,
mm-hmm,
to Motley Crue and Iron Maiden.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
At like the age of 6 and 7 years old.
Right.
Breakdancing, all that shit from him.
Right.
And skateboarding.
Nice. And so in Portland, the kids were rockers, and you're like, what the fuck is a rocker?
Rockers are just weird. Like, they're super into football.
Uh-huh.
So I got into football. Uh-huh. Like, but it was like, not no one skated, yeah, really
in Portland, really
not that many, not, yeah, where I like, not in the neighborhood
that,
I lived
not
in,
not at that time probably,
yeah, not at, and not at that, not in that neighborhood,
yeah, yeah.
So I was like, just kind of like, all right, I guess I'll adapt.
Yeah, yeah. What else was there to do up there?
Watch TV.
Yeah, well, were you heavy into the TV then?
Yeah, I mean, I always watched movies and shit.
Yeah. Did you have a lot of friends there or no? Or did you kind of go into your own world?
I ended up having a good amount of friends.
Because you seem like a friend collector, and I mean that in a very nice way, because I don't know why that sounds rude to me. But I'm saying, like, you're somebody that fucking everybody likes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, I mean, I've always been like this since, yeah, I was a little kid. It's like, I grew up, like, being able to just, like, quickly acknowledge people and respect people,
yeah,
as long as I recognize that they're a good person.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, like as a little kid, like my best friend when I was 9 years old was 21.
What?
Yeah, he ran the surf shop next to my house.
Uh-huh.
So he would take me, he would clothe me, give me skateboards.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've been swagged out since I was 8.
Yeah.
Like, I was working there.
Uh-huh.
Like, I was putting together completes.
Yeah.
Like, at 8 years old, 9 years old.
No,
like,
shit.
Yeah, working at this, like, surf shop called Locomotion.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just, like, they'd feed me, take me surfing, clothe me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd roll in them, like, new clothes all the time. And my mom would be like, where'd you get that?
Right.
And I was just like, oh, Paul gave it to me.
Nice.
Yeah.
What was not being able to surf when you got to Portland a big shock as well?
Yeah, I mean, the ocean in general in Hawaii is like a big part of your life.
Yeah, that becomes like a part of your family, it seems like, the, yeah, ocean.
I mean, my family, I mean, I grew up in a family of fishermen.
Yeah.
Like, everything we did was surrounded about the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, we have our own canoe club, our own regatta. Like, we have our own, like, house on the beach.
Yeah.
We all, like, you know, pitch in and, like, fish and stuff.
One of the best meals that I've ever had in my life was at Mama's Fish House on Maui, and I was like astounded that they tell you like who caught the fish, where they caught it, how they caught it. It's like, oh, this was caught moon fishing by such and such yesterday, and it's like, whoa, that's fucking tight. Fishing is a big thing in Maui.
Yeah,
that's dope,
especially with my family.
That's dope.
Yeah.
What kind of fishing were you doing?
The big fish there that they like go after is this like silverfish called a coolie.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of the general, like,
how do you catch it?
Nets.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's like a bunch of different fishes that's like everyone eats them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
you ever had any run-ins with a wild boar?
Not that I can remember.
Yeah.
But I remember my family going up to the mountains and getting one.
We were like on some hikes out there. That was like what I was most fucking frightened of. I'm like, I do not want to fuck with a wild boar right now.
Yeah, I mean, that is kind of sus.
You know what I'm saying? Like, that shit is mad scary. So anyways, do you just start to get deeper and deeper into music as a kid? Like, what was the scene in Portland in the, well, I'm imagining this is like the mid to late 80s?
Yeah, the mid to late 80s. I mean, I wasn't really in a scene at 10 years old.
Oh, obviously, yeah.
But like, I mean, later on in like early high school,
yeah,
like I got really in, like, you know, grunge hit.
Oh, yeah.
So, and, you know, I was in the Northwest.
Did you take to grunge? Obviously.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
So I was like in it, you know, like I was.
So you must have been kind of early to it, though, or early to it as well, because you were like in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So like you probably knew about some of these bands before they were breaking on MTV.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up like I knew bands that didn't break on MTV.
Yeah.
There's a ton of bands that were huge in like Portland and Seattle that never like hit MTV.
Yeah. Which has probably become somewhat of a theme in your life, because that's still kind of your responsibility to be like up on things before other people are.
Yeah. I mean, I would see some of Elliot Smith's first shows in his old band.
Oh, wow.
Like, he was in a band called Heat Miser.
Uh-huh.
Once I first started going to shows when I was 16, I was obsessed with them. Dandy Warhol's first couple shows I saw.
Yeah.
And like, you know, like Everclear, like all those bands. Like,
dude,
I saw,
used to love Everclear. I just thought of them the other day.
Yeah, I saw them. When I was a junior, senior in high school,
yeah,
they filmed Heroin Girl, that video.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
At Burnside.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, all my friends ditched.
Yeah.
Except for me.
Oh, you were...
So I wasn't in the video.
So they're all in it except for you?
Yeah.
Oh, that fucking sucks.
I miss all the tight shit, dude. Like, Slayer did an in-store at Tower.
Uh-huh.
And kids were moshing in line.
Uh-huh.
And, like, people were getting bit by Slayer and shit.
Oh,
and,
shit.
Like, carving Slayer into their arms.
Yeah.
And it turned into, like, a crazy riot.
Yeah.
And I was in there.
That was in Portland?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds crazy as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, so grunge hits, and that's like a thing for you. And then are you going to shows all the time at that point?
As soon as at 16,
yeah,
I started going to my first show I went to was Metallica.
Oh, shit.
With Suicidal Tendencies and Candlebox.
That's a weird lineup.
Candlebox got added on because Alice in Chains went into rehab.
Oh, okay.
So very weird lineup, very amazing.
Yeah.
And after that, I was kind of hooked. I went to two big like shows after that.
Yeah.
I went to this crazy radio tour with Afghan Whigs, Violent Femmes, James, MC 900 Foot Jesus.
Oh, shit.
House of Pain.
Yeah.
And it was on the mountain. It's
yeah.
Like $10.
Nice.
It was pretty nuts.
That sounds dope.
Grabbed my first crowd surf that day.
And was that like just a life changing moment?
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, dude, the first time I like wild out and went in mosh pit, dude.
Yeah, it's the most fun.
Yeah, and then I went to Lollapalooza 94. Which still makes everyone else jealous.
That's dope. Who was playing that year?
Smashing Pumpkins on Siamese Dream.
Yeah. Jane's Addiction?
No.
No?
That was early on. I was like 94. This is like, no, like, that was like 92.
This is 94.
Yeah. So I saw Green Day opened.
Oh, yeah.
Beastie Boys. I saw Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. Saw, God, who did... Oh, Tribe.
Oh, yeah.
I think I saw George Clinton. I saw Shonen Knife. I saw The Boredoms. Like, super, like, so much wild shit.
Yeah. So in the teenage years, like, this became your thing. Like, going to shows became your thing.
Yeah. As soon as I got and became a junior in high school,
yeah,
it was, like, on.
Yeah.
All I did was go to shows.
Yeah.
And I got to see, like, some crazy shit. I saw Bjork on the post tour.
Oh, wow.
With Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
I saw, like, what else? Saw Bad Religion a bunch of times.
Bad Religion was my first mosh pit.
Yeah.
Do you start to figure out how to get into shows for free? Like, do you start meeting people? You know what I mean?
Actually, yeah, I did. I started to get swagged out my senior year in high school.
How?
I was just friendly to all the...
You're friendly to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You start meeting promoters.
Met promoters. I met the door people.
Yeah.
I treated all the security just really nice.
Yeah.
They recognized me from coming to like shows all the time.
Yeah.
And like just being a nice kid that like didn't ever get in trouble.
And were you already, you're probably like 6'3", 6'4"?
No, I'm 6'2".
You're 6'2"?
So I was like,
you carry yourself
big.
But so like you're this big teenage kid that's like at all the shows, and they just start to recognize you.
Yeah, and then like, you know, start getting free cookies and pizza from the cafe girl.
Right.
Like, then met up with this girl named Jack who was in Team Dresh, this like local like queer punk band, and she was just like super cool. She thought it was rad that I was like a big kid that really was nice to people.
Yeah.
So like met her and she would like walk me through the back door.
Nice.
And there's like a bunch of people that like the staff there really like just like took to me.
Yeah.
At the big major venue there.
Yeah. Which venue was that?
It was this venue called La Luna.
Okay.
It was pretty much like my home base from like my junior and senior year in high school.
Yeah.
I would go like every week. Didn't drive for a while, like while still going to shows. And so I would pay people, like I would buy their ticket just to go to anything.
And so this just kind of became your sanctuary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like all I wanted to do was go to shows. I went from being a like honor student to barely graduating high school because all I did was go to shows.
Because you just got super distracted with music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you're going to anything, but like what do you feel like was really dominating your personal playlist?
I mean, when I first got into like really got into like punk, when I figured it out, that was all I wanted to go to. I went to other shit too because I still liked everything.
Yeah. What was the band that cracked that wide open for you?
I mean, probably like NoFX.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, that was like the kind of like the wide one.
Yeah.
But then when you got into like when I heard Minor Threat, it was game over.
Right.
Like Minor Threat just kind of like ruled my life and anything even remotely like connected to it.
Yeah.
So Descendants, like Gorilla Biscuits, all the New York hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
7 Seconds, like all this shit, like just changed my life. And that's all I wanted to do and that's all I wanted to be.
Right.
There's a local band called National Guard that I was like fully obsessed with.
Yeah.
And like I was just like, yeah, like just like them. Like I was super nice to them. They were super welcoming. They were really cool. Like they would do a mailing list, but a phone list too.
Uh-huh.
And they would personally call you to let you know when the next show is.
Oh, that's pretty tight.
And like, cause there's like not really much internet back then.
Yeah.
So they would call you and be like, hey dudes, what are you doing this weekend? We have a show. Come hang out, man.
Yeah.
And I ended up talking to these dudes for a while. And like, I was super into the fact that they called me. So I was like, yo, if you want me to sell t-shirts and shit at my school,
yeah,
let me know.
Right.
And, you know, ended up selling like $200-$300 worth of like t-shirts, like $5 a piece. Tapes were $3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I just got like a bunch of kids from my high school into them.
Yeah.
And they're like $5 t-shirts. Sure.
Yeah. That's
and,
tight.
Yeah. Like, and it was this kind of thing like we all did was like, I like got a crew like kids that are super into punk that skated all the time. And we just like all went to shows all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you end up going on the road with people and doing merch for them?
I was supposed to go on tour with National Guard this summer after I graduated, but my mom,
she was like, fool, you better go to college.
No, she was like, we're going to Hawaii.
Oh, okay.
I hadn't gone back since I moved there. And so like, it was a month and a half trip to Hawaii. And I would have to come home early to go on that tour.
Oh, right.
And like, they were like, dude, can you please do this? And I'm like, I can't.
Right, right.
I didn't actually start touring until like 1999.
How did you not, or did you ever catch the like musician bug? Like, were you in bands?
I mean, yeah, I was in bands. Yeah. Around 97.
Yeah.
It's like 19,
yeah,
18 years old, like, I was like about 19 years old, and I like my friends asked me to join this band, and they're like, at the time they're a ska core band, but I was like, I don't want to be in a ska core band,
right?
They're like, well, we're like, listen to the new shit we're doing, and it was like Bad Brains with Horns,
okay,
and I played trumpet, and that's why they wanted me in the band so bad,
right?
I was like, right, we'll figure it out.
I could see you as a trumpet player in a ska band, though. Let's keep it 100.
Yeah. We played ska songs. I liked ska.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I love ska.
Yeah, like, no, that's like the surprising thing about you is I wouldn't have guessed that looking at you that, like, you're super into, like, pop punk and fucking, like.
Oh, dude, I like pretty much everything except for, like, country.
Right.
That shit just never vibe with me.
But that one is, like, one of your heavy passions, though, right? Like, fucking punk rock bowling and shit like that?
No.
No?
Punk rock bowling is a mess, dude. I'm never doing that.
You're
ever.
Not down?
No. Like, I'm... The whole... Like, dude... I mean, the whole thing that everyone laughs at me about is that, like, I do this job where I have to be social and fucking be this thing, and I have social anxiety.
Yeah, same, dude.
And it's just like, yo, like...
The older I get, the harder it is to actually go to shows and have a good time. Because I just start sweating and being weird.
Yeah, and people fucking touch you, and it's fucking the worst.
How do I always end up in behind the craziest person in the audience? That's what I want to know.
I'm a big dude, so like I always, no matter where I'm at, feel like I'm in the way.
Yeah.
And that is an issue.
Yeah, dude, it's the same for me. Like I feel like my cock is always touching something.
Dude, I feel like someone's always touching me and they're always sweaty. And I'm just like, dude, I was like, yo, just stop touching me. Oh my God. Yeah. Fucking get away from me right now.
And I used to love that shit as a kid. Like, going to a show and being a sweaty dude with your shirt off and like crowd surfing and moshing was nothing. It was like tight.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, ugh, don't touch me. Like, get away. I'm like, I just want to be in my bubble and like leave me alone.
Yeah, listen to the music. I'm a grown up now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to watch the show from the stage and be a fucking, not get touched.
Yeah, yeah. So you say you start going on the road at 99. What was that about?
I went on this tour with this band from Seattle called Trial.
Yeah.
It's like straight edge hardcore band. Uh-huh. They're very political.
Did you get straight edge for a while?
I was straight edge for 10 years.
For 10 years? What years was that?
Like 96 to pretty much 2006.
Whoa. So 96, you're 18 to 28, you're straight edge?
Pretty much, yeah.
Straight edge. How straight edge? Like no drinking, no smoking, no booze, but also no sex? Because isn't that part of straight edge?
I didn't lose my virginity till around then.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Really?
I was a late bloomer.
Really?
I didn't have my first kiss till I was 22.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Why? Was it a religious thing or just what was it?
Skater girls.
Yeah, yeah. No shit.
I was just like, I was like, that was like the one thing. I was like, I make friends, but I don't know how to like go from A to B.
Right.
Like
right.
That shit was like frightening to me.
Yeah.
You know, unless it was on the internet and I had mad internet girlfriends.
Yeah, I feel that. That's funny. I have the opposite problem. I'm like, it's very hard for me to make friend girls, but it's very easy for me to just like make out like in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, I have no idea how to. I'm 36 years old. Still can't do that.
When did you start getting tattooed? Because you're covered in tattoos.
My first tattoo was actually when, like 22.
Yeah.
Probably a month after my first kiss because that girl sucked.
What was it?
This tattoo is Hopeless Romantic.
Oh, okay.
Kind of.
So
was
you
like,
went straight to the forearm?
Yeah.
Yeah, tight.
And yeah, like my friend bought me like this gift certificate to like the tattoo artist that he goes to and like got a $50 tattoo.
Did you get obsessed with it? Did you just start going all the time or what?
I just went I've been perpetually poor since birth.
Mm-hmm.
So like I couldn't afford to like go get like,
but you made friends.
Yeah
exactly.
I got like three out the way and then like didn't get tattooed for a while.
Yeah,
then I have another friend that would start like wanting to tattoo me, so I got like tattoos and it was like $50 an hour. All right, not a big deal.
Yeah.
And then I met my friend Bradley, Bradley DeLay from Portland, that he started apprenticing, but he'd been a fine artist for years and years. And so, like, I knew that I could trust him.
Uh-huh.
So he's like, yo, come into the shop. I'll, like, do a free banger for you. Like, just pay $20 for the needles.
Yeah.
And we're good.
Nice.
And it went in super smooth. And I was just like, yo, how many tattoos have you done? He's like, this will be my third.
That's...
Yeah. Wow. And it was, like, on my... It was on my shins.
Yeah.
So it was like... What should have been hella gnarly, it just went smooth right in.
Yeah, I didn't. I only have like one little tattoo on my shin, but it was that's an easy spot. It doesn't really hurt that bad, I don't think.
Right on the shin is like not that fun.
Yeah.
But then, so that went in, and I was just like, yo, man, if you're going to do that again, let me know. He's like, yo, actually, let's make a deal. Let's tattoo you every week until you get covered or we get bored.
Shut up. So you went in.
Yeah. Dude, every week.
Yeah.
Sometimes twice a week.
I mean, that period of your life, wasn't it kind of a bitch just always being covered in A&D ointment and shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude. And like at one point I was like getting like feeling sick because I was healing three places at once.
That's the whole thing. Every time I get tattooed, I feel like I get a really bad head cold afterwards because all the white blood cells are trying to like fix this open wound on your body instead of taking care of your sinuses and shit or something.
Dude. Yeah. And at the time in Portland, like, you know, I was promoting and running four bars. So I did most of my tattoos hungover. And that shit is not fun.
Yeah, it sucks.
Definitely puked after a couple of them.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good.
Nah, sweating, just fucking gnarly.
That's the whole thing is I would love to be more covered in tattoos because I love just the whole process of it. It's fun. The only part of it that I don't like is the like... the 3 days afterwards where you have to like, you know, wear sweatpants to sleep or like long sleeve shirts to sleep so you don't get fucking A&D ointment all over your sheets. And
thing is like, I don't ever use A&D.
What do you do?
Dude, you just dry heal it. You just wash it.
Really?
Yeah. For like the first 2 days.
Yeah.
Unless it just is like really just like kind of rough.
Yeah.
Like if it gets shitty, then you put A&D ointment on
it. I've always used the A&D just to make sure I don't get like an infection.
Yeah, the first 2 days, you just wash it a bunch. And then, like, after the second day, you start lotioning it. Like, anytime it gets, like, kind of, like, hella dry.
I use a bunch of lotion. Yeah, absolutely, for sure. I do that.
I mean, some people use A&D, some people don't. I was doing it for a while. It just depends on each person's body.
Yeah, for sure.
My shit, like, would get irritated and get fucked up.
Yeah, yeah. No shit. So what do you have? Your legs covered, your arms covered, you got your torso?
Nah, just my chest.
Oh, okay, word. And so, neck, too?
And my neck.
Yeah. What'd your mom say about your neck tattoos?
She actually didn't see them. Like, I got my first neck tattoo, and then the entire rest of the trip, I had my hood up.
Oh, shit.
Yo, my mom still, to this day, because every time I get a tattoo, I put it up on, to push my homie.
Right.
And, like, my mom will be like, aren't you done already? Stop.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'll like comment. My mom loves Facebook.
Yeah.
That's dude, funny. My mom is like crushes Facebook.
Yeah.
And like every time like she'll just comment on something. I got like Unlovable tattooed on my on my wrist and like some more. It's like a Smith song.
Yeah.
And she's like, God loves you, Conrad. You're definitely not unlovable. And I was like, dang.
That's so funny.
Just like had like. I like did like three bangers in one day and my mom's just like, aren't you done already?
Yeah. My mom's the same way. My mom actually hates the fact that I get tattooed though, but I promised her that I would never get anything that, would show up outside of a collared shirt.
Yeah.
So I was like, I won't get my hands. I won't do my neck until you die. Basically. Like that sounds morbid, but I was like, don't worry, while you're alive, no tattoos will be outside of a fucking collared shirt. But so like, at the same time, I don't like tell her when I get a new tattoo, I'm not like, oh, hey, check it out. Cause then I don't know. She'll just be like, why are you doing that to yourself? And so the other week I had just gotten more forearm stuff done, and then the other week I went fly fishing and I sent her pictures of the fly fishing and she's like, oh, that looks so beautiful, and like, oh, it looks so much fun, I'm glad that you caught fish. And then she's like, I see you got new tattoos, and then immediately went, but oh, the scenery, like she just threw in this little barb about like, you know, I see you got new tattoos and I'm disappointed in you, but I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like broke the ice hella quick.
Yeah.
So my second tattoo is for my mom.
Oh, nice.
So it's like a red rose, which is her favorite flower with her name on it.
Right.
And she's like, oh, Connor, blah, blah, blah. And then she grabs my arm and shows everybody.
Nice. Like, yeah, I got the daisies for my mom as well. That's her favorite flower. And then there's like three of them, you know, one for me and my brother and her. And I did that one like very openly on my wrist so that I'd be like, look, I'm going to get a sleeve, mom, but like this first one is for you. So like, don't be upset about it.
Yeah.
And I think that kind of like calmed things down a little bit. At the same time, I feel like my mom's funny about it because it's like, she'll tell me how she hates him, but then like she'll kind of like show him off to her friends, like, oh, look how tattooed Lee is. It's so, can you, you know what I mean? Like kind of
bring that shit
up. Like embarrassed, but wants to show them because like, oh, look at my son's a gnarly dude.
Yeah, no, my mom's the same way. And I'm anticipating a lot of that when I go home.
Yeah.
Because before, like the last time I went home, Like I had sleeves, but I didn't have my hands, my neck, right. or my chest done. Right. So like, that's just gonna be a lot more.
Yeah,
and they're just gonna be like especially the neck shit. They're just gonna be like, what is wrong with you?
Right. So wait, let's get back into it. 99, you go on the road.
Yep.
And what are you doing? You're tour managing?
I was like roadieing. I was just like doing merch and like sometimes I would settle cash. Yeah. And just kind of like all around his help.
Yeah. You know? Home base was still in Portland.
Yep.
And then where does that, when you get home from that tour, like what happens? Like how do you get into promoting?
I've been always like, since I booked my first show in like 96.
Okay. So while you're still in high school.
Yeah. Just outside of high school. Like I graduated in 96.
Okay.
And then it's like the fall after, like I booked my first show.
Where at?
The first show I ever did was this shitty theater called the Paris Theater. It's now a porn-like theater. Mm-hmm. And like, they're infamous for like ripping off bands, but it was like one of the only places that you could do shows.
Mm-hmm.
It's like super hard to do all of your shows in Portland. Mm-hmm. And so like, but there's like ways.
Who'd you book?
Just local bands.
Yeah.
But then from there, like I booked.
Well, wait. So your first show that you do, how did you do it? Like, did you have a budget or was it like, we're going to sell a certain amount of tickets and then just give us a door split?
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're just like, yo, I want to book this show. Okay, cool. After our door expenses, we'll give you a percentage of the door.
And then were you able to break off the bands? Did you make enough
money? Barely, like if any.
How many people showed up?
Like 40, 50.
Did it feel good though?
That I got it done?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and I was like, all right, cool, I'll do it again.
Yeah.
I just kept doing it. And like, you know, by doing stuff like that and getting involved, being in bands, like, I mean, I did pretty much everything you could possibly do in DIY punk rock and hardcore.
Mm-hmm.
I shot photography, did graphic design, made my own flyers, like postered myself, like on poles, like did distro, you know, I was in bands, like every part of it that you could think of.
So you taught yourself how to just be a well-rounded like promotion machine, because in a sense, you learned how to do everything that you need to do so that if you couldn't find somebody to do it for you, you could just pick up the slack.
There was no one else to do it. Yeah. It was just me. And if there's other people that wanted to help, tight. But if not, it's all on you.
Right.
I'd be like out on the streets at 2 a.m. with like a Walkman and like literally like with a staple gun hitting the poles.
Yeah.
Like all over Portland.
Yeah.
And like that was something that like, you know, I got into from like being in a band with a kid who worked at Kinko's.
Yeah.
And I was like, another thing is like, yo, you always got the homie that worked at Kinko's.
Dude, they're all, I had this the same fucking story of like doing that staple gun with and like going to staple up poles and kiosks and blah, 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 blah. And like, Mark used to work at a Kinko's. That's how we would make our flyers and promote our shows.
Yeah, the singer for the band I was in was the plug at Kinko's. Yeah. He's the major plug. Like, he hooked everybody up.
Yeah, totally.
And then, like, one year, I became the plug.
Yeah.
And I hooked everybody up.
Yeah.
And got fired.
From Kinko's?
Yeah. They're like, yo, you're going on tour. Like, I was the model, like, dude. And then they took me to, like, I went from working days to the graveyard shift.
Yeah.
Just couldn't function.
Yeah.
And like, I was too distracted. I was hanging out on AOL all the time instead of doing my job.
Uh-huh.
And it's like totally fucked.
Right.
So it is what it is, but I got to plug hella homies.
Yeah.
And stole hella shit.
Yeah. So the 2000s hit and you're promoting shows pretty heavy by that point?
When I got back, there was like, I mean, even from the mid to late 90s, I was like promoting a lot of shows.
Yeah. And is that how you were making your living? Or did you
No, not at
job?
All. Okay. No. Like, I worked at Rite Aid and then Kinko's and then like worked at coffee shops and shit for a long ass time.
Yeah.
So like, but I like took coffee shop jobs because at any moment, any time, like you could go on tour.
Yeah.
And that was like what I wanted to do. Like for the longest time, all I wanted to do was like go on tour, be merch, and eventually maybe be a tour manager.
Right.
And like, like all the dreams of being like a punk rock kid and like the thought of just working at a record store. Dude, I tried to work at the record store, my local record store.
Yeah.
From like, fuck man, from 1995, 94 to like probably 2005, and I finally gave up.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to give me one shift, right, and then someone else got it. And I'm right, like, okay, fuck it, man. I give up. Yeah. I don't care about working at your fucking record store.
Right.
God damn it.
Yeah, why are record stores so hard to work at?
I don't know, man. But they would always ask me about, like, music.
I heard getting a job at Amoeba is, like, damn near fucking impossible.
Really?
Yeah.
It's weird, because I know hella people at Amoeba.
I know a lot of people that work there, too, but I feel like it's, like, they're all, like, super scene kids or something, or scene dudes.
Yeah, you know? I could see that, yeah? For sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so I went on tour, did a West Coast, like, went down, did 3 dates originally, and then did Canada. Like a few weeks later, West Coast, came back home, and then did a full U.S. after that.
With who?
This band called Trial from Seattle.
Uh-huh.
They're like a pretty big straight edge hardcore band.
Uh-huh.
Super political, like really into like everything from human rights to animal rights to, crazy social issues.
Yeah.
Like, the singer Greg Benick is a very, very intelligent dude.
Uh-huh.
He actually is like, he's still super active.
Uh-huh.
He, when Haiti hit, he literally, when they had that, hurricane or whatever, he literally jumped in a boat and brought over rice.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Like, and he did a lot of benefits for them. And like all over the country,
yeah.
For that,
yeah,
he's super into that. He's super into philosophy.
Uh-huh.
Like he's been in peace talks with like between countries and the UN and stuff.
Right.
Like, but then he also juggles.
Okay.
Yeah, like he's a professional juggler.
Yeah.
And like motivational speaker.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So he made his dough going to like corporate events.
Yeah.
And telling people how to like live.
Wow.
And live excellently.
Yeah.
So very, very, very smart, very like well-spoken dude.
Yeah.
So but also super silly and like
what
the best dude.
So like conversations on the road are a lot of fun with that dude.
Oh yeah. Cause it was like everything from like breaking down the type of bands we would play with.
Yeah.
It was like either like fast old school bands like da 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 or like chuggy metal hardcore mosh bands like ja. Or a combination of both. It's like da 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 da. These are conversations literally that I remember sitting in a fucking van with.
Yeah.
And like every dude in that van was a total character.
Yeah.
So guitar player Tim McIntosh, insane, insane dude, totally wacky, loves Morrissey.
Yeah.
More than life. Loves metal, loves Motley Crue more than life.
Nice.
Dude, like, so, like, passionate for music, yet such a fucker, too.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, always pranking people, always fucking with people. Like, he's just, like, a funny, weird dude.
Right.
He's just awesome. And then, like...
You're super into Morrissey, right?
I love Morrissey.
That's, like, your shit.
That's my shit.
How did you get into Morrissey?
Probably from Tim.
Yeah.
Tim and, like, all my other, like, hardcore... Like, it's a... It makes sense, but it's like a weird thing. There's like big connection between hardcore kids and Morrissey.
Yeah.
I mean, I think some of it stemmed down from like San Diego with my friend Rob, who's in this band called Unbroken.
Uh-huh.
They're super like Morrissey fans, and they were like very much on their sleeves, like badges of honor. Like,
yeah.
We fuck with Morrissey and Smith and Joy Division and Bauhaus,
yeah,
and all this shit.
Because Morrissey's been doing some weird shit lately, and you're on Twitter on your fucking, you're on like some fucking Team Morrissey defense shit.
Oh, always, man.
You're like, protect Morrissey.
He's little B of me.
Yeah.
Like, dude, I will task force anybody.
Yeah, Morrissey task force.
Because there's so many fools that are like, right now especially, like he's just wilding out.
Yeah.
And like people are ready to jump shift. And I'm like,
what's up with your boy? Why is he doing such weird shit?
Yeah, man, he's old and he's like fucking, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He's Morrissey. Fuck it, man. He's ready to call anybody out at any minute.
How many Morrissey tattoos do you have?
I got 9 Morrissey tattoos.
9 Morrissey tattoos?
Yeah.
And then
I'm committed for life.
The last show that you went to, you bought like a Morrissey medallion, right?
Oh yeah,
swagging it out still.
Oh yeah,
yeah, fuck yeah, dude. That's amazing. So what's like the show? Did you start like a weekly or a night in Portland? Like that's kind of trained you for what you're doing, or was it all just kind of random shows that you were booking?
I mean, for a long time, all I did was book punk and hardcore shows.
Yeah.
And it was like handshake and a wink, never like signed contracts.
Yeah.
And it was like, yo, I cover the expense of the door.
Yeah.
And you get the bands keep the rest.
Right.
Like if I made money one time.
Yeah.
Like crushed it.
So you're just doing it for the love, basically. Yeah.
I never took money like as a hardcore promoter.
Yeah.
Ever. I took money one time because there was so much money afterwards. I was like, I couldn't not take it.
And what
I
band gave, was that?
This band got Counterville, actually, from here, from LA. And it just happened to be like one person's record release show and another band I hadn't played in a long time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was just like, dude, I paid all my friends really well. Everyone got the biggest paycheck they had in a like pretty much ever. One band bought a van with the money paid, like they got paid with. Like, and I still had like fucking like $800.
Yeah,
and I was like, what the fuck?
Nice.
How? And they're like, the house took like their like minimal cut, and then now they're like, yo, you deserve this. Here you go.
It's dope.
So I gave my mom a bunch of money to pay rent.
Nice.
And then I invested the rest in a distro with my friend.
Nice.
And so I like, pushed music that I love.
Yeah.
And, like sold it for like cheaper than stores.
Yeah. When did you get out of doing hardcore and starting doing more kind of varied genre shows?
I mean, I never really got out of hardcore. That's the weird thing.
Maybe like, not out of hardcore, but you know, like when did you start delving into eclectic lineups?
Okay. I mean, I was always doing weird shit, but like... Yeah. It was like, I was always that kid that just kind of bounced around.
Yeah.
Like, I was friends with, like, all the punk and hardcore kids, but I was hanging out with the Lifesavers.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, like, tight with the Thermals.
I think I played with the Lifesavers one time in Santa Barbara.
That's sick.
Yeah,
dude. Like, I mean, I learned how to DJ watching Rev Shines, like, DJ at, like, bar gigs.
Yeah.
And stuff. And, yeah, like...
Because that's one of your other passions now, is, like, you DJ, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, did you buy turntables to figure it out?
Yeah. Like, I actually... begged my friend for 10 years to let me borrow his turntable or buy his turntables from him. He finally broke down and sold them to me for like $200.
Yeah.
Got a setup, like had a bunch of records. I just learned how to mix. Yeah. Sat in my room for like every day, all day, all night until like I learned how to like mix and like do weird blends and shit.
Yeah. What did you, what were you trying to learn to mix?
I mean, originally.
Like, what were your sets like?
I mean, when I first started, like, mixing, like, I guess, because, like, in Portland, like, for a long time, like, if you just were a selector, you can just play songs and play in a bar and drink and hang out.
Yeah.
And just play whatever you have. Like, that's cool. But, like, when I first started really getting mixed, like, the way I learned how to mix is, like, I took Jaquan Tipsy and stuck it behind, I blended it with, Nutrimilk Hotel.
Oh shit.
Yeah. Nice. Canned Carrot Flowers.
Yeah, yeah.
And like made it work. And what? By the end of it, like my roommate was, I hate you so much because you were in a song for me. Like you did this. She was like tripping. She was a huge fan and she was just like, you ruined this for me. Like this is fucked. Like I love this band and you played it and then stopped it and played it and stopped it an entire day.
Oh yeah, so you ruined Jaquan for her, right?
Oh yeah, she hates that beat now.
No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, like you know, like watch. I would sit and like just watch, like Rev Shines and like this dude DJ Kez who worked at 360 Vinyl, which is now closing after like pretty much everyone bought their records.
Yeah,
it's been like years and years. Like. Yeah. Finally closing like next month. But yeah, just watching those guys like do bar gigs and like watching how they transition, how they mix and like what they did with the knobs, and that's how I learned how to mix.
So you were into rap shit and hardcore shit at the same time?
Yeah, rap shit, hardcore shit. Like
were you going to rap shows too?
Like like here and there, but I wasn't super like
There's not really a lot of rap shows in Portland, are there? Like they get shut down by the cops or something like
that? That's a huge thing right now. Goes back to there being there a lot of white people in Portland.
Yeah.
People are really scared of like hip hop right now. And it's like, yeah. I mean,
did you know Greg Immaculate?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He was at Globus, I guess, Last week.
Oh yeah, because of the big battle where a big fight broke out. But
yeah, I saw the video. It was super tight,
crazy. yeah, I was just, dude. Apparently, that dude fought somebody else too. Man, it's all crazy. Anyways, yeah, Greg. I remember I saw some video of Immaculate's like show getting shut down by the cops for no fucking reason and shit.
Yeah, I mean he had a sold out show and then like cops showed up and I was just like. He's like, yo, I'm not doing this. So I'm not going to perform. Like, not going to be a fucking victim in my own city.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, yo, he was right because he stood up and said some shit. And it's like, yo, fuck this.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, like, I mean, I helped book a lot of the old Sand People dudes, like from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, like Taupe and like all those guys.
Sapiens.
Yeah. Yo, Sapiens, my dude. I know, for sure.
Yeah, that small world. What bands were you early on bringing up to Portland or booking as they came through?
I mean, I, weirdly enough, was like, I mean, for like hardcore shows or?
Just for whatever.
Well, okay. So how I got into booking shows professionally.
Yeah.
I got drunk at a gossip show at this bar called Burbotties. Uh-huh. It's a club and... Apparently, I was drunk and told my dude who worked the door, that I didn't know worked there, if they needed help, let me know.
Yeah.
Next morning, woke up. I was like, what did I do?
Right.
And then got my phone instantly rang. And he's like, yo, were you serious about that? I'm like, I guess. Met up with the manager, like the head of security who... he's like a famous, like, traditional skinhead.
Uh-huh.
He, like... And very proper dude. And he was just like, at the time I was like very well dressed, like Fred Perry's and Ben Sherman's, like crop top, like this clean cut hardcore kid.
Right.
And he's just like, yo, nice Fred. You want a job? Start tomorrow.
No way.
And then from then on, I've worked 60 hours a week plus ever since. And then, but I worked security there at night and worked coffee shop during the day.
Yeah. And then booking too?
That's where that comes in.
Oh, okay.
So working security 6 months, I got offered to move up to barback.
Uh-huh.
Then the family found out, like they had no idea that I booked shows around town.
Uh-huh.
They thought it was really weird that I knew all the big promoters in the city and they were like, walk up and shake my hand. Uh-huh. It's like, and like chat with me. And I was like, been helping them since I was a kid. Like, like they would come to me asking me about like what they thought about shows and like who I should be on for support and all that. And I've been doing that for like, fuck man, like almost 10 years prior to this.
Right.
And then,
so you didn't go in like blabbing your mouth like, oh, you guys are underutilizing my talents. Like,
not at all.
Like, man, started from the bottom type shit. Yeah.
And they're just like, yo, do you think you could do this job?
Yeah.
Because we're thinking about letting the other person go.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can try. And I literally learned how to book professionally because of that.
Yeah.
They literally just threw me into the sharks.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, go swim.
So you start having to deal with like booking agents and shit like that?
Yeah. Actually.
Making bids or whatever?
Yeah. Like, by putting in offers and shit. And like, I learned how to put in offers like Trevor Solomon, who now books Music Fest Northwest there, was one of the main talent buyers at Mike Thrasher Presents, which is the big like promotion company there. He's like the golden voice of Portland.
Yeah.
And he was just like, he taught me how to do holds, like hold system and venues. He like kind of helped me with like with putting together offers, and I hired on an assistant who helped me talent buy and taught me how to do offers and like do the math and stuff, showed me the math, like in expenses and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I learned how to do that. And, you know, based on my taste, like, you know, started like dance parties there, did a lot of like dance events. I booked A-Trax for a show in Portland.
No shit.
With The Rub.
Wow.
80 people came.
No kidding.
Yeah, it was so early on. Portland was not ready for that.
Dude, I don't know if I think maybe I've talked about it on this podcast before, but the first time I saw Diplo live was in 05.
And
it was at Scribble Jam in Cincinnati. He was the opening DJ the first night, like not even on the main stage, like in this like pre-event that they have.
Yeah.
Like he was kind of just DJing this dank fucking attic, dark dank attic, and like that was, and now that's fucking Diplo. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy.
Now he did a Holotronics tour with Low Budget, which is his partner, and at Holocene, and I was at that show.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was like 2005,
yeah,
2006.
It's so crazy. It's like when
2006,
it was
yeah.
When Florida came out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
But great. Yeah, so we booked a lot of like pop, like indie pop stuff.
Yeah.
And it was like helping Thrasher get into that venue a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, yeah, like I learned how to DJ, so I was like throwing like dance parties and shit.
Yeah.
Like it was wild. And then from there, like, you know, kind of ran its course after a year, went to work for Thrasher for a year.
Like,
but then
Thrasher Mag?
No, Mike Thrasher.
Oh, Mike Thrasher. Okay, sorry.
So went to work for Mike Thrasher
I got
for years and his booking assistant.
Yeah.
At the same time, I ended up throwing the first big, like, hipster party.
Which was?
This party called Juicy.
Uh-huh.
It's like lasted for like 2 years, I think, like something like that.
Yeah.
And it pretty much, like, the venue that we did it at, we pretty much, a month after they opened, we did the first one, and from then on, we were paying the rent every month.
Oh, okay.
For like a year.
So you did start, was that a monthly or a weekly?
It was a bi-monthly.
So you do it 2 times a month for 2 years?
Yep, pretty much. And first and third Fridays.
When you say hipster party, like what kind of bands were you booking?
It was just DJs.
Or DJs.
And for the most part, it was just local.
Yeah.
But we were like playing like everything from Baltimore Club to electro and dance, to like straight like Dirty South hip hop,
yeah,
like just
so
all over the board.
Was it kind of Portland's answer to the Do Over?
No, it was like Portland's version of like Cinespace Tuesdays without
The
bands.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, like there's like kind of a jump off in almost every city similar to that.
Yeah,
like in Seattle it was Sing Sing,
uh-huh.
And then Devro was doing some shit in Vancouver.
Uh-huh.
I did the Portland one, and then Frankie and Aoki were doing Cinespace Tuesdays and Banana Split Sundays, and they were doing that shit.
Yeah.
And that's how I started into, like, the club shit, like, booking and DJing that shit, and, like, that's how I met Frankie Chan.
Yeah, so you booked him to come up there?
Yeah, I booked him, and, like, I had booked, somehow I got lucky and booked Chromeo.
No way.
Chromeo and Flashadamus at my party for the Fancy Footwork tour.
No shit.
Yeah.
So, is this before they were like Chromeo, or was it?
That's when it just started to happen as Chromeo.
Oh, no shit.
So I ended up putting 700 or 800 people.
Yeah.
In a 400 cap room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was the first time I ever made. It was like all on me. Like yeah. I helped, like the venue helped me.
Yeah,
like backed me, and like I did the. It was the first major guarantee I'd ever done on my own.
Yeah,
it was pretty scary, but sold the shit out. Got tattooed. Got some Jordans.
Nice. How did the fire marshal not shut that one down?
I don't know, kept a good secret.
Yeah, that's tight.
It was wild. It was like, people still talk about that show today. Like,
no shit.
How fucking hot and crazy and insane that was.
And so, being that you're a dude who's easy to make friends with, were you like kind of broing down with all these groups too and keeping a good rapport with them?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like at that show, I just like bro down with Flash Thomas, and like their act that I really like looked up to.
Yeah,
I was like really into their vibe and like what they brought to the table. And
well, and on some other like tying ends together shit, like Flash Thomas is Kid Sister's brother, and I met Kid Sister through you, and then you talked her into being like, oh yeah, fucking kind of needs tight, you should do it, and then she did the show, so that we owe that to you.
Thank you.
Yeah,
no, you're welcome.
Yeah, most definitely.
But actually, the reason why I got Chromeo is because I tried to book Kid Sister with Flashadamus, and Kid Sister wasn't available.
Oh, okay.
So they're like, the agent was like, I have Chromeo.
Yeah.
And I'm like, confirmed. What do you mean confirmed? I'm like, confirmed. What do you want?
Yeah. Nice.
I got you.
Like,
dude, Flashadamus and Chromeo for $10.
That's a big show.
Insane. Yeah.
That's a big
and I was
show.
Like, that was like kind of just set shit on precedent. And like, yeah, it was fun. Had a really good local DJ that really brought like a lot of like she had a really good jaw and she killed it. Just DJ Bionda.
Uh-huh. Shout out to DJ Bionda.
She mixed everything from the myth. She like mixed Misfits into like Trina.
Yeah.
Like, and she would flip anything at the time. Like,
nice.
Because that's what it was like all about at that time, like blends and like just throwing it was like straight up dance party style. Like any weird shit that you could like throw in. Like, she'd flip fucking Sonic Youth.
Nice.
Panda Bear, like whatever.
Yeah.
Like, she crushed it.
So you meet Frankie up there in Portland, and then do you guys click?
Is that what happened? We clicked. Yeah. I was really into IR Comics, so I ended up booking him.
How'd you know about IR Comics?
How did I know about IR Comics? His label. But, like, you know, I was always a kid that, like, I did this thing. So what is other people doing in other cities?
Right.
You know, like, watching Holotronics and, like, Roxy Cottontail in New York, like, doing all these fucking wild parties, man. And, like, I want to do that.
Yeah.
I want to do these fucking crazy lineups that they're doing in L.A. right now. Like, it was just like, what the fuck? All these Philly and B-more kids are, like, just crushing it.
Yeah.
And I'm in Portland, and it's really hard. It's, like, really sheltered up there.
Yeah.
It's like, nowhere to go. We go to Seattle. That's it. Vancouver, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, after that, there's, like, a 8-hour drive from Portland to SF.
Yeah.
So it's, like, you know, it's, like, hard.
Yeah.
So...
And SF was kind of in a lull too, almost.
Yeah, it was kind of weird. Like, Vincel was doing some shit.
Yeah.
There's some other kids that were doing shit in there, like, really trying to push it.
Yeah.
But, like, it was, SF wasn't quite as cracking
as LA was. Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, I ended up doing pretty much all the IR Comic shows just because I was a fan.
Yeah.
Portland. Like, did Totally Michael, did Ninja Sonic, did all these, like, an affiliates, you know, like, everyone that pretty much was affiliated with IR Comics, I would do.
Right.
Did Future Cop, 20 people showed up.
Right. So you're in contact with Frankie quite a bit then.
Off and on, but I would just, because I liked what he did, I booked his bands.
Yeah.
And the bands that were affiliated with his shit.
Right.
And
when does it get to the point where it's like, hey man, like, come kick it in LA and see it.
Well, yeah. Well, the year before I moved here, I like was hitting him up. Like, I was booking tour for a band in Portland called Reporter.
Uh-huh.
And I hit him up about playing Czechio because Czechio started again. I was super hyped that like that was happening.
Right.
And no party in the country had like crazy recap videos like put together like that. Like, that I had seen.
Right.
And like the video, like the photos, the mixtapes, like the whole package. And that really like excited me. And then he, so I was like keeping contact with that. And then the whole trash talk thing came through. And then as soon as I got back from Portland, I'm like, I don't fucking want to live here anymore, man.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, it's, dude, money's rough there. Like, dude, I was running 4 clubs and not making money, like, at all. I was, like, barely paying rent and shit. And I was just like, yo, I work so hard to, like, not even do, like, the super tight shit, you know?
Yeah.
Like, not putting together all these crazy lineups and, like, because it's hard to do that in Portland. Because
you're, like, fucking 2 years ahead of everybody there or something, kind of, right?
That, and I'm also, like... There's no one wants to pay $15-$20 for like a party.
Right.
At that time. And I was just like, yo, Frankie, if you know anyone that is hiring or whatever, just let me know.
Yeah.
I wanna live in LA. And he's like, I can't hire you, I have no money. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But then he ended up calling me. I was on tour. I'm tour managing this group called Africa High Tech.
Uh-huh.
They're like on Warp Records from Australia.
Oh, okay.
And I was on tour, like boarding a plane. He calls me. He's like, hey, I have money. Do you want to move to LA?
Yeah.
And I'm like, he got some help. And then like to make IR Comics like a real thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay, moving down.
Yeah.
That was it. I was like, I'm going to be in LA in a week. Let's talk about it.
And then so you just instantly get to work, and that's where the...
Yeah, like, I mean, I moved down there like 3 months later.
Yeah.
After the tour, and then that was it.
Nice. How have you liked LA?
I love it.
Yeah.
I don't want to really ever like move away from here.
That's kind of how I felt when I moved down here too. I was like, oh, I think I found what I was looking for.
I mean, I just walked into like a cool situation because I'd already had like friends like built up from the hardcore scene.
Yeah.
And then like my DJ friends.
Well, and it seems like a lot of the friends that you'd already established from that scene kind of moved here at the same time too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Trash Talk had moved here like about a year before, maybe. Yeah. And then
One of our recent guests, Antoine, you've been friends with him for a while, it seems like.
Yeah, he's for a little while, yeah.
He's out here now, fucking.
Yeah. No.
You got a good solid friend base.
Yeah. I mean,
Adam and Romo.
Yeah, no, it's rad. Like, I can turn around and it's like, I got homies in every different scene.
Just driving just here, like, you were noticing people on the street that you knew.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's just like, yeah, like, you know, drove by Jamie Strong walking down the street, probably going to Cha-Cha.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, like I just fell into this like situation and it was cool because like from like me fucking with different things, like other people were open to like hanging out together and like people who didn't know each other were like hanging out together. And now it's like, you know, like I'll be in a room and like the Garage Rock Blundertown kids are hanging out with the hardcore kids who are hanging out with, like, you know, like DJs who are hanging out with like the Ratchet fucking Ham on Everything crew, you know, like the Warehouse kids, like everyone is like all cool. And that's like the difference in LA from a lot of other cities around the country. It's like rather than like beef and like over some bullshit, we just all do our thing, and like when we can come together, we come together. Yeah. It makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're like a legit nice person and like do good business, and just do cool shit, man. Like, people pay attention or are super mellow about it and, like, potentially open to, like, work with you.
Right.
You know? And just hang out with you.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yeah, it's wide open here right now, I feel like.
Yeah, it's pretty sick, man. Like, the vibe in LA right now especially is so tight. Yeah. So many different cliques, like, just crushing it.
Yeah, I mean, it could be fucking local bias, but I feel like the shift has moved from New York to LA in the last few years of like where the center of cool shit happening is kind of right now.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. I hate New York City.
I'm not going to go that far because
I'm going to. I'm at war with New York City.
All right.
I have plenty of friends that live there. I will never go there.
Really?
Nope.
Why?
Because that place is a piece of shit.
I don't want to delve too far into that. Hey, we're just gonna.
All right, let's stay based here. Let's just say it's a very uncomfortable city, and I don't like being uncomfortable.
It is. It's not made for big people like us. You know what I mean? It's very small. Very small living quarters. I feel very claustrophobic while I'm there.
Yeah, same.
Yeah,
and I can't get there anywhere on time.
This is going to come out on Wednesday, so in 2 days. So that being said, do you have anything you want to promote coming up this weekend?
I believe Adam is doing a Throwback Thursday at the Lash.
Oh yeah, the Lash. You can catch Adam and Romo, and you're going to be DJing as well.
I believe so.
Conrad's going to be out there at the Lash. That's a fun night. It's a really small little room downtown, and they just kind of give you guys free reign to do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so like the other night I was there and you guys were playing all emo music.
Yeah.
What are you guys going to do this week?
It's just like throwback 90, like late 90s and early 2000s jams.
Yeah, for sure.
Or 90s and 2000s rap jams.
You hear a lot of Ja Rule, a lot of 50 Cent. It'll be fun.
But
what else?
A very, very, very big deal on Saturday. Southern Hospitality is coming to LA. Very rare. My boy, Davey Boy Smith, who's been just plugging every rap dude for the last God knows few years, and like
Southern Hospitality is a great blog too, right?
Yeah. That's their main thing, is that they're a blog and they just constantly pushing like rap, like the new rap music,
brand new shit.
Yep, from drill to old, like to like the South, to bop to like all that shit. Yeah. It's just all the new shit.
And Davey Boy Smith is the gent that runs that.
Yes,
and so he is bringing a party to LA.
Yep,
and did he move out here now?
Yeah, he lives in Orange County.
Okay.
And so we've been talking for a long time about fucking with each other, and finally we are.
Nice.
And it starts this Saturday.
So on Saturday, if you're in LA, is it at a warehouse? Is it like a secret thing?
It's at the Lash.
It's at the Lash.
So it's going to be very rare because it's very small.
Nice. Yeah. So get out to the Lash. Come see my man, Conrad. Thank you so much for doing this. I appreciate it, man.
Same, bud.
Where can the people find you on Twitter?
At Still Ill PDX.
Still Ill PDX. With all the I's and the L's, I always thought it was still Lil PDX. Little, like.
I wish I was little.
Like Lil PDX, Young PDX.
I wish I was.
Follow my man at Still Ill PDX.
And, I'll make you laugh.
Go look at the iHeart Comics site. He is curating a lot of great shows in the city all the time. Check Your Ponytail 2 is still on and cracking, correct? Yeah.
Off and on, yeah.
Off and on. It's not.
It's changing.
Yeah.
It's going to be a TV show now.
Yeah, you guys are working on a TV show, so you have other shows that you're promoting with iHeart Comics.
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, be on the lookout. Conrad is a dude who like really gels the scene together. Well, whatever scene, multiple scenes together. He's a dude that you'll see everywhere in LA if you're out here. But yeah, man, thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards making it sound buttery, Ben Shim at I Am Database, base with two S's. Follow us as a unit at That's Kinda Neat. YouTube.com/That's Kinda Neat. Facebook.com/Kinda Neat. And download that podcast app to your phone. Search for Kinda Neat. Subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating. Some reviews. Tell us who you want to see on the show. And tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to tune in. Thank you guys so much. I'm Lee. That was Conrad. And this is Kinda Neat.